Good afternoon. Lily Marlene, the song that everyone remembers as one of the hits of World War II. This week, the Home Guard celebrated the 25th anniversary of their disbandment on the 31st of October, 1944. In the Isle of Man, this anniversary was marked by a reunion dinner at the Palace Hotel. During the war years, some 4,500 men served in the Home Guard here on the island, and today I'll be talking to six of them, from the north, south, east, and the west, and we'll be listening to music from those years, which we feel sure will bring back many memories. Firstly, we talk to Mr. T.R. Moore of the Peel Company. Well, firstly, Mr. Moore, can we say to you, welcome to Manx Radio.
Well, thank you very much.
Now, you are in charge, I understand, of the Peel Company.
Yes, that's right. If I could just tell you a little of how we started. Of course, the Home Guard was started very, very suddenly after the fall of the Holland and France. And we all joined up as volunteers. There were no ranks in those days. And I can well remember the first evening we were put up on a post overlooking the Peel Bay from the top of the Cow. There were two of us put up there. All we had was a walking stick and an armband. And it was a beautiful June evening, of course, warm weather. And I remember Mr. Howie coming round as the inspecting officer to see we were at our posts. And he said, "Now, are you two boys all right up here?" We said, "Yes, I think we'll be all right." Well, he says, "I'm all right because I've got a revolver." Well, I said, "Have you got any ammunition?" He said, "Oh, no."
Just the revolver, no ammunition. But this was really how it started in those early days, wasn't it?
This is how it started. It was started very suddenly as the local defense volunteers, of course, an armband and a walking stick. But being on an island in the center of the Irish Sea, I think we were one of the first, really, to become very, very well equipped as a Home Guard unit.
Now, what sort of strength did you have in Peel?
Oh, in Peel, the Peel Company, which we covered quite a large area. We covered from the Round Table and the Slock area down through Patrick, Peel, out to Cronkavoddy and round to Greba.
Were there any incidents sort of sighting enemy aircraft by members of the Peel Company?
No, I can't really recall. I can remember there was the night they dropped a few bombs on the south of the island. Of course, naturally, the boys that were on duty that night up on the Slock, they had quite an exciting evening.
Yes. Well, what about some amusing incidents? I mean, in wartime, the sense of humour of the men always is at its most, isn't it? Were there any amusing incidents you can recall in your area?
Well, I've been trying to think of the humorous part about it. It's very difficult to set one's mind back so far, but we had a Peel Breakwater Guard, which was quite a serious guard, and of course the whole coast was blackened out. And these boys did a marvellous job out there in the winter evenings, and sometimes they weren't even able to get off for 48 hours. But one or two of these lads, they used to have a patrol that went out every hour, and one of the patrols, of course, was round Peel Castle, round the back of the castle, and of course it was pretty dark, and one of these boys was quite satisfied he'd seen the Morgue Du, the black dog.
He had seen it.
On another occasion, one of the boys who was generally late on parade used to come on his bicycle and to pull his leg one night. As dawn broke in the morning, before they went off duty, he couldn't find his bicycle, and this was originally found up on the top of the flagpole at the end of the breakwater.
There were amusing incidents you've recalled for us, Mr. Moore, but really the Home Guard was a very serious part of the defence of the island, and in fact it depended, Great Britain a lot, depended on the island being so central, didn't it?
Yes, it did, and I think that's why possibly we were so well equipped. We were equipped very, very well, pretty quickly. I remember in 1941, which is just about a year after we were formed, we did have the honour of providing the Guard of Honour at Tynwald. And I've been looking at some old photographs, and we were properly dressed, we were pretty well equipped, and I think the drill was excellent.
All in all, it was serious, but it was enjoyable.
Very serious. And, of course, where we had the disadvantage, rather, we had to work in little groups on our own. We hadn't a central headquarters like the 1st Battalion of Douglas had, the drill hall. We had to form our own little drill halls and our own headquarters in the various villages. But the marvellous thing, to my mind, was the great friendship from these boys that worked on the farms, who were very, very shy. It got them together, and I think in some ways it was the happiest days of our life.
Mr. Moore, many thanks indeed, and perhaps you'd like to send very quickly best wishes to all the members of the Peel Company who are listening to the programme.
I certainly would. I would like to not only send best wishes to Peel, but to Ramsay and to the Southern Company, whom we used to cooperate with. And just one point I would mention, being on this island where we had the Obtus and quite a few troops, we had some very good exercises with them, which kept us well on our toes.
Mr. Moore, many thanks indeed.
Thank you.
Well, Mr. Gore, if we could first say welcome to Manx Radio.
Thank you very much.
Now, you were with the artillery company, I understand, weren't you?
Yes, I joined the artillery company in 1942. After serving with the Loyal Manx from the Wigan, the war sergeant, until I thought I'd cleared up Douglas and got everything straight, and I wanted a spirit of adventure, so I thought I would join the Home Guard.
Yeah. Now, where were you based with the artillery company?
At Tremode barracks. We had all the guns there.
Yeah. Well, what sort of guns did you have?
Spigot mortars, and we had Hotchkiss guns to begin with, I believe.
Yeah. Now, we've been talking to Mr. Moore earlier. It was serious, of course, the Home Guard, for the defence of the island, but there were some amusing incidents, I'm sure, that you could tell us about.
Well, certainly there were, but when I left the Loyal Manx, I thought I'd join the Home Guard, so I went to Captain Jem and came at the headquarters and said, have you got any soft jobs going? He said, oh, no, they're all filled here. He said, I think my brother Harold at the artillery wants a clerk. So I went down to see Brother Harold, and I said, I believe you want a clerk. Oh, he said, I could do with one, but I said, I don't want to go hopping over hedges or anything like that. So he said, well, how old are you? I said, I'm 52. So he said, oh, I won't have a younger man tell me that he won't hop over hedges, so that's all right. So I was organized the office along with Hampton Wallace, who was the quartermaster sergeant, and he looked after all the stores, and I looked after all the attendance registers and saw that everybody turned up and did their bit. And when the conscription came in, we got a list of all the people that were available for service, and Captain Kane went through the list and he picked out all the home, the farm servants, because he said they used to hard work and they could shift the guns and things. So we had a very strong, hefty lot.
Yes.
So it was, and then as regards transport for the guns, we had hired vans, and we personally lent them a Dodge van. And in one occasion we had an exercise out at Craignabar, and coming back we had the van loaded with about 20 to 30 personnel, with the guns being towed behind. Well, coming down Johnny Watterson's lane, we couldn't control the van because the weight of the gun was pushing us forward, and we went dashing down Johnny Watterson's lane across Barnard Road right down to Tremode before we could stop.
Well, you managed to stop in one piece.
Oh, yes, we did, yes. It nearly wore out the brakes, of course.
I bet it did, yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Now, what about practicing? Did you do a lot of this, did you, target practice?
Oh, yes. Well, they had the drill during the week. You know, all the formations, you know, all the military commands. But then on Sundays, they went out for practice, and they took various parts of the island and climbing hills and all around that. And, of course, I, being on the staff, I just, the part I took was partaking of the dinners provided by the field service.
You were the most important man, I bet, to them.
Oh, yes. Well, we had to chase all the absentees to see yes. why they were not turning up, and all they had to be responsible for attendance and keeping the records.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Just to sum up, you would say that the comradeship in the Home Guard was really first class.
Oh, yes. Oh, very good, because after all the practices, they adjourned to the canteen and they played darts, and I think they were such good marksmen because they practiced so much on the... they got so much bull there, you see, and they...
When they came to rifles and after to guns, it was easy after that.
Oh, yes, they were, yes. After the darts, you know, because they're on the target all the time,
yeah.
You see.
Mr. Gorgon, we say many thanks indeed for joining us on the programme, and would you like to pass on perhaps quickly greetings to fellow members of your company who are listening in?
Well, all the members of the thing. The sudden members that are unable to attend through other engagements, well, I hope they'll have us in mind on the occasion of our dinner on Friday.
Many thanks indeed.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Neal.
Special Home Guard program. It's a great pleasure to welcome to the Manx Radio microphone Deemster S.J. Neal. Sir, can we say a very good afternoon to you?
Thank you very much. I'm a bit nervous about this interview because quite a long time since we were dealing with Home Guard matters, and so far my difficulty is to consider what I should precisely say on this occasion, so I hope you'll help me in that respect.
We'll do our very best. Could you tell me first, how was the Home Guard formed here in the Isle of Man?
It was formed as a result of a broadcast by Sir Anthony Heden. And as soon as he did so, a great response in the Isle of Man, and men immediately went to police station to register.
Yes.
And we had our first mass meeting of volunteers at King George V Park, when approximately 500 men turned up. We divided them into localities where they were residing, which was the obvious way of handling matters in case of calling out. And in addition to that, it helped us enormously in relation to where our headquarters for the various units should be based.
Yes.
then I, as commander of the 1st Manx Battalion, they also included in my area the parish and village district of Onchan, the parish of Braddon, the parish of Maraun, and Santon. And it wasn't very long before we had a strength of well over 1,000 men.
But this was a wonderful response from the Manx people, wasn't it?
Oh, yes, a very great response. And the great thing about the whole response was that quite a large percentage of the volunteers were ex-service men, which formed the real hard core of the battalion from its very inception until the stand down.
Yes. Now, for perhaps younger listeners who don't remember the Home Guard too well, in what way did you work? Did you have certain drills every week? They reported every so often. How did a week actually go by?
We were training nearly every night. And in addition to that, we were manning observation posts. In our area, we started off with approximately 25 in various points, so that we could cover the whole of the island in case of a parachute drop.
Yes.
That was our first purpose.
Yes.
We expected that's how the invasion would commence.
Were there any sort of serious incidents that you can recall that happened to the battalion?
No, it was only one occasion when a bomb was dropped in Bolwyn, at Bolwyn, but that was a bomb from a German aircraft which was being chased from Liverpool area.
Yes.
And that's the only incident we had during all the time.
Yes. We were talking to Mr. Moore of the Peel Company a little earlier, and he said the island was possibly the best-equipped Home Guard in the country due to the strategic position. Would you agree with this?
That's perfectly correct. As a matter of fact, they feared an invasion by the Germans through Ireland.
Yes.
And with the Isle of Man as an aircraft carrier for the enemy.
Yes.
The result of that was that we got our rifles, machine guns, and ammunition, and all the various equipment, wireless sets, and everything you could possibly think an infantry battalion should have from headquarters. So we were never the pike brigade,
no,
as it's referred to.
Yes. Now, the Isle of Man area, you would say then, with the training and the equipment, it was a fully trained battalion?
I would say yes. As a matter of fact, Colonel Lee, who succeeded Brigadier Ford, had told me a short time after he'd taken over that he was amazed at the efficiency of the 1st Manx Battalion. He took the view that we were completely mobile and could compare favorably with any reasonable infantry battalion, and so efficient that he wouldn't hesitate to send us into action at any time.
Could we ask you this final question, sir? The Home Guard of this week are celebrating the 25th anniversary of the stand down. How do you feel, thinking back, what are your outstanding memories? Is it a sad occasion that it's 25 years, or is it a happy occasion?
Oh, no, it's a very happy occasion. It's been one of the most so rewarding tasks I was ever party to, and it was a very, very fine show. And you've got to remember, we had great advantage in the fact that, in consequence of such a large number of ex-service men, with previous experience, we were in this fortunate position. We could establish a headquarters with signals, ambulance, intelligence, and in addition to that, we of course had expert riflemen,
yes,
machine gunners, and generally the whole paraphernalia of a battalion was quickly established. And of course, we were never short of ammunition.
Can we say many thanks indeed for joining us on the program today, and perhaps you'd like to close by sending greetings to members of the 1st Battalion who may be listening to the program.
Yes, may I send you all good wishes. I hope most sincerely I'll see you, most of you on Friday, but if not, keep the flag flying, and thank you all for your wonderful cooperation.
Deemster, many thanks indeed.
Is that all now?
Special program celebrating the 25th stand down of the Home Guard, we welcome Major Groves, second in command of the 2nd Manx Battalion of the Home Guard, who is now the longest surviving and is the senior officer. Major, can we welcome you to Manx Radio on the special program?
Thank you very much.
Could we ask you firstly your impressions of the formation of the Home Guard or the volunteers in the north of the island?
I remember it so well. I remember Anthony Eden's broadcast in May of 1940. And then Colonel Scott sending for me and Joe Hughes, who was going to command in Ramsey, and telling us about this local defense volunteers. And we were so lucky to have him, Colonel Scott, because he's an Irishman, a great sense of humor, a very, very distinguished officer, and he knew the Isle of Man, which is the main thing, because otherwise we would have been quite hopeless. And we were lucky, too, to have other very good people to start with. In the north, we had Horace Walker and Stevens. In the south, we had Percy Kizik. And then we had George High, succeeded by Tom Boar in the west.
So this was the formation of the LDV, as they were in the north.
The LDV, yes. In the very, very beginning. And, of course, we were a very motley crew to start with. We were dressed simply, we simply had our armbands. Later we got demons. But we were very lucky to get rifles at a very early stage. There were rifles in the Douglas police station, and they issued, every single platoon had a few rifles. And we were given 5 rounds of ammunition per man. So the men knew how to shoot from the very beginning.
Yes.
But then, of course, give them uniforms. But the two things which really made the Home Guard an efficient fighting force were, first of all, the formation of battle platoons and fighting patrols, where we learnt to fight under all kind of conditions and give orders, receive orders.
Yes.
And the second thing was proficiency badges, because the men were able to train and to pass their proficiency tests. Mm. And by the end of the time, we became really a fighting force, which would have done itself very well.
Yes. Now, during the course of the war, I'm sure there were one or two amusing incidents that you would like to tell us about in your area.
I can think of many. Time is short. I'll tell you one. In the very early days, I went to Selby, where the local platoon was known as Selby Cossacks. And the general commanding Western Command came with Colonel Scott. The men were dressed in demins, they just had rifles, and their drill was simply awful. There was one man, an ex-Navy man, who was just 5'1" high, was 4'11" round his stomach. And we cut down the largest size of demins and cut them down a foot so that he wasn't stamping on them. The general saw the drill, turned to Colonel Scott and said, "Well, I don't think very much of their drill." Colonel Scott said, "Well, sir," he said, "they can shoot and they can fight." So the general said, "Well, if that's so, I can soon test their shooting. I'm going to give a cup for the whole of Western Command, 100 battalions competing." 6 months later, we shot for the cup. The 1st Battalion were first, the 2nd Battalion was second, the whole of Western Command.
Very good indeed. Yes, indeed. Now, perhaps a final question for you. How does it feel now? What are your main impressions now, 25 years afterwards?
My rain recollections of these, they're very, very vivid. That we had the most wonderful spirit. We had young, we had old, we had from people from every walk of life. Just at Mackle, we had one boy of 15 who said he was 17. We had an old man who, when we came to find signed forms saying people must be under 65, I said, "You must be more than that. You've got both South African war medals." He said, "Yes." He said, "There's a sergeant in 1890. And I said, "How old are you?" He said, "I don't know." He said, "I've lost my birth certificate." But he said, "I feel much under 65. I said, "Right, sign on the dotted line, you're in.
So really, your impressions are of happy times in a serious situation.
Happy times and the most wonderful spirit of self-sacrifice and cheerfulness. And in every class of life, the farmers especially, these chaps who'd had a day in the plying after the horses, they say in the Isle of Man, yes. They pull them out the horses, going there and cheerfully turning out, and all kinds of old men. There was one man in Ramsey who couldn't march, who was too old to do anything, and so he turned up every night in the drill hall, and he brewed teas for other people. And that's the kind of the spirit of the Home Guard. No, I'm all right, Jack, and that's the kind of spirit I hope still survives today, and I'm sure it will do.
Major, can we say many thanks indeed for joining us on the special program.
Thank you.
We move to the south of the island and welcome to this special program Mr. T.C. Farragher, MHK, who is the commanding officer of the Southern Company. Mr. Farragher, it's very nice to welcome you to this special program.
Thank you. And my memories of the Home Guard days are very pleasant ones. I finished commanding officer of number 2 platoon of the Southern Company Home Guard. We in the south had 4 platoons, number one in Castletown, number 2 in Russian, number 3 Malou, and number 4 Kalby. We in Russian had a force which we are very, very proud of. They were very conscientious and they very, very rarely missed a drill. I can remember one conscientious young man who was working at Ballinahowe Farm. Many of you will know where that farm is and where it is situated. There was an order at that particular time when all members of the Home Guard had to attend parades with their respirators. And this particular night, a very bad, dark night in the wintertime, he arrived at the headquarters without his respirator. He was so conscientious, he put his rifle inside the door and ran back to Ballinahowe, which is quite a distance, yeah. Collected his respirator and came back to do his drill. Now this is what the men thought of the Home Guard in the south, and this is how they attended their duties. There was nothing too much trouble to them. It was a pleasure to be with them, and there are many little incidents which I couldn't very well record, but yet at the same time, I can remember on one occasion our platoon was to be attacked by another platoon, and a quarter of an hour prior to being attacked, we were notified to be prepared for this attack. And I'm rather going before my story, but prior to this, I went on a course to the south of England. And while I was down there, they were getting rid of blank ammunition and thunder flashes. And I asked the sergeant what was happening to them. So he told me that they were destroying them. As a matter of fact, they were taking them out in a boat and dumping them. So I said, would he mind giving me some? I'd like to take them back to the Isle of Man, because we hadn't any blank ammo, or very little blank ammunition and thunder flashes for practice. So he agreed to give me this. So I packed two cartons of blank ammunition and two of thunder flashes and carted them all the way back to the Isle of Man. Well, as I was saying before, this attack was called for, and I issued the blank ammunition to my platoon and the thunder flashes, and we got our positions in readiness for this attack. I can well remember Colonel Scott, Major Kizik, and or several other officers were coming along in transport, coming along toward Russian by Ballaghan. And as they got to the position where our men were placed, they started lashing the thunder flashes onto the road underneath the lorries and firing the blank ammunition, and it really shocked Major Kizik and Co, because they were unaware of us using any blank ammunition or thunder flashes. But I can very well remember that night when we got back to our headquarters after the exercise was over, Major Kizik pulled me to one side and he says, look, Farragut, he said, you've got yourself in a very awkward position here. And I said, why, sir? He said, you've used blank ammunition without orders. What are you going to do about it? He said, how are you going to replace them? I said, this blank ammunition said doesn't belong to you. I said, I brought this from England when I was away on the course. Oh, he said, are you sure of that? But I think to this day he doesn't believe me, or didn't believe me. And funnily enough, I was nearly caught marshal over that. But it worked out all right in the end.
Yeah. Happy memories indeed from 25 years ago. You must have them, Mr. Farragut.
Oh, very.
Yeah. Would you like to perhaps close down your little part of the program by sending greetings to fellow members of the company in the South who may be listening to this program?
Yes, I would like to say to all the old members who are still alive, there are a few of my good friends in the Home Guard have passed on, unfortunately, but there are still some who I see frequently, and there are some I don't see so frequently. I'd like to send them good wishes and wish that we should all meet again someday before we die.
Mr. Farragut, many thanks indeed.
That sounds...
Well, now on this special... Well, now on this special program devoted to the Home Guard, who were disbanded, of course, 25 years ago, we welcome Mr. Norman Crowe, MHK, who is a member of the Kirkmichael Company. Mr. Crowe, can we say a very sincere thank you for joining us on this special program, and welcome to Manx Radio.
Thank you very much.
Now, the Kirkmichael Company, which area of the island were the points you had to patrol?
Well, it was in the Kirkmichael area, principally, but on occasion we did go to the Peel Breakwater, and just in the surrounding district, really.
Yeah.
The hills above Michael and the shoreline, and as I say, on occasion, Peel and the Breakwater.
Yeah. This was perhaps the important side of the island, wasn't it? Because someone earlier in the program said that the possibility of an invasion from the Irish side of the Irish Sea was the more likely.
Well, as far as getting ashore is concerned, this is the only part of the island from Kirkmichael to Ramsey where landings could be made. Mm. unless they went into a harbour, naturally.
Yes. Mm. So it was really an important part you were in?
I think so, yes. Yes.
What about amusing incidents? Did you find any of these happening during the course of the war?
Oh, yes, on occasion it was quite laughable. I remember on one occasion, for instance, we had at that time an elderly retired policeman from over the water who was a very diligent member of the Home Guard, and he was a sergeant at that time. And that evening there was an alert and the sirens had gone, and he was running up and down the village shouting, "Guard, turn out," with a loaded shotgun in his hands, and probably there was just as much danger from him as there would have been at that time from an invasion.
From an attack.
Probably, yeah. Yes.
These sort of things happened, didn't they?
Oh, certainly they did. And I think, really, in a country district, it was naturally very good that nothing ever happened as far as an invasion is concerned. But I think in a country district, those members of the Home Guard, I think they're maybe better qualified even than town members because of their ability to stalk and hunt game and all this kind of thing, you know.
Yeah.
They did, I think, have a little advantage.
Mm.
And at that time, Michael was well equipped with good shots as far as rifle shooting was concerned.
Yes.
But whether with the 303s, we did quite a lot of practice, admittedly. Whether we would have shown up quite as well or not, I don't know. And there was rather a strange incident, or it wasn't strange either, but rather funny. I remember on one occasion when we were out practicing, we had a new recruit, and he was asked to take the 303 and fire at 200 yards. And he did get the rifle to his shoulder, his left shoulder is that, and he got his right eye to the sights. And I think he could have been in a rather a predicament if anything would have happened.
You would indeed.
Yes.
Looking back at it now, Mr. Crowe, it's celebrating now, of course, the 25th anniversary of the stand down. Would you say your memories of the Home Guard, even though in a war, they were happy memories?
Yes, as far as the comradeship was concerned, yes, there's no doubt whatever about that. It did bring all the persons in the vicinity together, and naturally they all pulled together for any eventualities.
Yes. Mm. Which, as you say, in a country district, perhaps this was more important.
I think that's true, yes.
Could we ask you finally, Mr. Crowe, would you like to pass on perhaps greetings to fellow members of the Kirkmichael Company who may be listening into the programme?
Yes, I would, and I'm sure, as far as our area is concerned, we are a happy district, there's no doubt about that. But to all those past members of the Home Guard, I would sincerely say good wishes for the future.
Mr. Crowe, many thanks indeed for joining us on this programme.
Thank you very much.
For the past 45 minutes, we've presented a special programme to mark the 25th anniversary of the Home Guard disbandment. We've been talking to six of the men from all parts of the island who served here on the island. We trust this program has brought back pleasant memories for many of you. The perfect way to end this special program is to hand over to Gracie Fields and members of HM Forces to close with another song of that time. Now is the hour. From Peter Neal, it's a very good afternoon.